past week brought some pretty bad news for, well, I want to say Central North Dakota, but really all of North Dakota. I think it's maybe gone unappreciated. We've taken coal and the steady, the steady and reliable and cheap electricity that it has provided to our region, not to mention the economic impact. We've taken it for granted. And we've now obviously entered a time in our history where we can't do that anymore. Coal Creek Station, the folks who own it at Great River Energy, they've announced that they're going to close it. They said they're open to finding a buyer. There are a lot of things that make that pronouncement a little bit dubious, although our political leadership sure seems to believe that, that we could find a buyer for it, but that's easier said than done because it's not just about, you know, changing hands. This power plant has to be hooked into the electrical grid. There are questions about how to transmit that energy because Great River Energy is not necessarily selling the transmission line that allowed Coal Creek Station to serve Minnesota. Anyway, here to talk with me a lot about that is Ladd Erickson. He is a state's attorney for McLean County, which is ground zero for coal country in North Dakota in a lot of ways. Ladd, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on, Rob.
What's been the local reaction? I mean, you're on the ground there in Central North Dakota. What's the local reaction to Great River's announcement?
Well, it ranges, Rob. Obviously, there's anger. That's to be frank, and that comes about because there's been up until the last few months, there's been a lot of representations that we're going to have Coal Creek for the long term. That's been testified to. That's been stated in media sources. Last fall, I was out contacted to help do carbon capture, seismographing, access the spots out there. A year ago, we permitted a cattle feeding operation to use steam. You know, there was no indication that the rug was going to get pulled out in the short term. And the reason that that brought about some anger is schools and cities have incurred like long-term bond obligations to remodel, to put in infrastructure for the miners and their families to support that industry. And every indication up until January of this year is there's a long-term reason to incur those debts and to continue to support that industry. And all of a sudden that's changed. The other side of the coin and every emotion in between that is some hope because of the strength that our congressional delegation and governor have shown. They put their political capital on the line that they're going to save that plant. And that has provided some hope for people. And so for me personally, Rob, I guess it's a little different. When GRE announced in January they were studying shutting it down, that did not fit in my understanding of where we were at. That would even be a possibility. And since I'm a prosecutor, I'm a skeptic on people's facts and why they issue press releases. And there's always a bunch of war gaming behind those. So I always try to look behind them, and I started researching it, and I started finding that they had already been laying out power lines, routes. They'd already been doing a lot of planning and upgrading to get to wind energy and eliminate Coal Creek. That culminated till recently, even that in March of 2018, there was a MISO grid application for a Mercer County wind farm. So that's 2 years ago that was going to use that DC line. Openly on the website of the company. So that was planned a couple years ago. So where I formed about maybe around the 1st of February, I formed the conclusion in my mind that they've already decided to shut down the plant. We did some zoning, which brought our congressional delegation and governor's office interested in the issue. There started to be a lot of conversations with GRE. So I guess where going into the announcement I was is they've already decided to shut down the plant. The announcement was a effort to look like they're deliberating on it, but I had some hope that they would respect Senator Hovind, the governor's positions, and change their mind is kind of how I was going into the announcement, but it didn't look like that. They did pay attention to those concerns, so I was disappointed in that.
Well, Ladd, let me interject here because it sounds to me like what you're saying is up until, correct me if I'm getting the timeline, but based on what you just said, up until January, all indications given to local government, I mean, because obviously, if you're a county government or a municipal government, the fact that that plant, you know, exists in a very rural part of our state, the fact that it's there and it's lots and lots of jobs and lots of commerce. I mean, even maybe the workers who don't live in the communities near the plant, you know, maybe they commute from Bismarck or something, but they're still buying stuff there. I mean, they're still, I mean, the economic impact is significant, not to mention the tax, you know, the tax impact. You're saying that up until January this year, every indication was that Coal Creek Station was still going to be a part. There's no plans to close. Everything's fine. And so the local governments went out and they made decisions based on that. Like everything was going to stay normal. They took on debt for projects or whatever. And now all of a sudden the rug's been pulled out from under them. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, not even local. That's absolutely true. And local businesses, in addition to local governments, people would remodel bars. They would buy bars. They would buy other types of business. There's a ton of support businesses to that industry. There's Industrial Lube in Washburn, for example, that just sells lubricants to the mine. They take on decisions for it. There's tons of private business decisions made on that. The representations in 2017, GRE told their Minnesota regulator that it's too expensive to shut down Coal Creek Station, and it will be there for at least the next 15 years. That's the regulatory period they reported. Well, it's that kind of rhetoric that has private businessmen saying, I'm going to open a business here and support that industry. I'm going to buy into a business. I'm going to buy a home here.
Yeah.
And in addition to the government.
The work, because by all indications, for at least the next decade and a half, the commerce is still going to be here. The workers are still going to be here. The tax base is still going to be here.
Absolutely. And that's why it was such a shock that it was all of a sudden a different plan, you know.
So what are the impacts now? I mean, Great River Energy, I mean, basically there's a clock ticking now. It's 2 years, roughly. So what now?
Well, that's an unknown. You know, we don't know. I guess we hope they're sincere in this effort to sell the plant. One of the biggest disappointments and frustrations that we had in the way that was announced was, and they overemphasized that announcement, was we've been trying to sell the plant, they said, but we just don't have any takers. And that was, you know, repeated. And, you know, Rob, when you look at, like, just from another matter, there's about 20 houses for sale in Washburn right now. That's probably pretty normal. I happen to know that from another reason. But those people are trying to sell their house. And when GRE says something like that, that affects real people. Costs them thousands, tens of thousands of dollars because, wow, the plant, nobody wants to buy it. When the truth is, you mentioned it in your introduction, the big rub so far has been the power line. The plant is worthless without the power line, and they're not going to find a buyer for the power line without the plant. They'll give away the plant. Question's going to be, the power line and the plant need to go together and stay together. If one gets demolished, the other one gets demolished. If one stays, the other one stays. And until those, you know, that's the nuanced approach. If they weren't going to cause harm to these people, would have been, hey, we're going to continue to work with your congressional delegation to see if there's a solution. You know, not committing to anything, but to say that they haven't been able to find a buyer when they've been holding out the connection of the power plant to the sale is what's, you know, damaging real people and frustrating.
So is there anything, I don't know, about Coal Creek Station that makes Great River Energy's announcement to close the plant particularly concerning, I guess? And the point I'm trying to make is, the plant is obviously, it's the largest coal plant in North Dakota. It's there. And I think what we're just talking about with the transmission lines, I don't think people understand that you can't just, right now, and maybe people don't understand this, so we should give them some background. Right now, there is a Coal Creek Station really feeds Minnesota. Great River Energy is a Minnesota company. Their customers are in Minnesota. This is a coal plant in North Dakota, but there's a big old transmission line that leads from Coal Creek over into Minnesota. The way Great River Energy is approaching this is they want to get rid of the plant, but they want to continue using the transmission line And from everybody I'm hearing, what everybody's telling me is they want to, you know, they want to strike a deal with the wind industry and have, you know, have that feed wind power through that line into Minnesota. So that makes, you know, if you're going to try to sell the power plant, you're essentially selling a power plant, which then has nowhere to send its power, unless I guess you try to work something out with other grids, which I'm, and I am not an electrical engineer. I am not an expert. I'm trying to learn on the fly here. But from my understanding, trying to route that power through other lines is going to be extremely difficult, if not impossible. Or I guess you could try to build a new transmission line, but we look at the political environment around that sort of thing, building new transmission lines. It's going to take, if it's even possible, it would take years and a significant capital outlay before you could even begin using that line. I mean, think of all the politics. I mean, look at all the politics we saw around the Dakota Access Pipeline. Building a transmission line is not necessarily the same thing. I mean, you got to dig up ground and everything else. So this is probably going to be greenfield development. I don't know. I mean, building a new line is expensive. And so whoever would buy the plant, I mean, those are their options. Either try to figure out a way to transmit power over existing lines or build a new transmission line, which is hugely expensive and may not even be possible.
Well, Rob, you nailed it there. And yes, there is something unique about Coal Creek Station from its history, and that is this. In the early 70s, Minnesota was growing, it's baby boom time, and they were short of power. And they originally started with the idea that they were going to build a Coal Creek Station-sized coal plant in Minnesota and ship coal from Montana. That's about 1972. And for 4 or 5 years of study, that morphed into, let's put Coal Creek Station by Underwood. Let's run what they call the CU power line to Minnesota for their co-ops and the Falkirk mine. Those three pieces of infrastructure were then federally funded as a national energy project. At the time, I believe it was the largest rural electric project ever conceived in America. And it was put together and it was supported by Quentin Burdick. And our old Kennedy Democrats that used to run North Dakota, Art Link and all those guys, got that thing going for Minnesota power needs. And I think Senator Burdick was probably appropriations chair at that time. He was at most of that time in that era. And so it was a joint Minnesota-North Dakota congressional governor office legislative effort. And we were going to supply them with power. We were going to take some of our farmland out of production and mine coal for them. We were going to get a coal industry here for us. You know, all the trade-offs back and forth was a joint effort. Everybody worked together. But that doesn't mean that that project wasn't hugely contested. Locally, it was very much opposed. The landowner that owned the land that Coal Creek sits on fought it. He lost his farm in an eminent domain action. He did not want that. All along the line in North Dakota, farmers fought that and lost in court and got one-time payments for that power line. But the real contest to it was in Minnesota. And people may not remember this, but it was like a DAPL thing, national media. There was over 100 arrests of farmers. At one point, half of the North Minnesota Highway Patrol was detailed to protect construction workers from violence. Thousands of insulators were shot out. Towers were getting toppled in the middle of the night. Eventually, that led to having to federalize the project, so they had federal criminal laws to arrest farmers in Minnesota and stop the protests. And so what happened is it became a federal project. It was mostly all federally funded anyway, but it became federalized for the use of the federal criminal laws. And then when it went into operation in 1980, one interesting fact here, who later became a U.S. Senator from Minnesota, Paul Wellstone, wrote a interesting book about Coal Creek Station and the power line called Power Line, America's First Battle in the Energy War. And he detailed all of that opposition and all of the reasons for it and all the history. And in all of that, the power plant, the mine, and the power line are one piece of infrastructure. That's how it was permitted through the PSC. That's how it went to Congress. That's how it was developed. That's how it was sold to North Dakota. That's why North Dakotans funded it. So the difference now is, if you look at the GRE press release, is their emphasis, if you look right at their quotes, the only thing now is our economic interest for our co-ops is the only consideration. That's different than the four decades of a partnership on, okay, this is what North Dakota needs out of this. This is what Minnesota needs. Now the position, and our leaders need to understand this, has changed. It's not the GRE we dealt with for four decades. The GRE now is, we are only going to make decisions for our economic interests of our co-ops in Minnesota. They stated that very clearly in their release. So we need now to make sure that we are just looking at the economic interests of North Dakota as we go forward. Those include, the power line has no value to North Dakota without the power plant. We have farmers here that fought that tooth and nail when that was getting constructed. And back then, they had no landowner sensitivity to the direction of a power line. If you're, next time you're coming through McLean County, Rob, you'll see that power line just crisscrosses right through the middle of farm fields. And so farm equipment has increased 3-4 times in size now, and it's a real burden for our landowners all the way from Coal Creek to the Red River farming around that thing. And if you look at what the potential plans would be, you put some wind turbines up, Western North Dakota, there's very little real economy to that. Most of the fluff and circumstance on wind energy is just that. I mean, when they say, you know, this wind project is worth $1.5 billion investment in North Dakota, it really isn't. Most of that cost is in another state where they build the wind turbines. Most of the workers that put them in, like 93%, are temporary construction workers. There's very few jobs when the wind turbines go in. There's some local taxes, that's true. But a lot of the landowners now that get the turbines are absentee landowners, so because they're the ones that want those. And so there isn't a lot of local economy. There's certainly not a lot of school kids and a lot of vendor businesses and housing values and
I wanted to make that point because Great River Energy, and I don't want to make this about Minnesota's a fine place. My family, a branch of my family, is originally from Minnesota. I like Minnesota. Minnesota's a great place, but there's sort of a feeling here for some of these Minnesota based companies that North Dakota is just going to be Minnesota's battery, and we are going. And they don't seem to care what happens here. The Coal Creek Station operating there drives commerce and everything else. By closing down Coal Creek Station, you close down all that commerce and replace it with what? Wind turbines that are going to be, okay, maybe so there's some maintenance people that are going to have to come through now and then to service them and to keep them up. But outside of that, I feel like this move is going to empty out North Dakota, and we're just going to become we're not going to become this. We have a lot of other things going on. But in some ways, it's going to make parts of our state desolate. And operating is nothing more than Minnesota's battery, and that bothers me. And again, we shouldn't operate coal plants just to create jobs. That's not the point. I mean, if the point was just to make work for people, then I guess we should go back to farming with horses and plows and stuff, because that was a lot, you know, that was a lot more labor intensive and it employed a lot more people. Obviously, we're not going to do that. That's a very Luddite view of the world, which I completely reject. But I have a problem when politics is shutting down a coal plant and costing North Dakota jobs and turning North Dakota into Minnesota's battery. I have a problem with that because that's politics. It's not the market driving that. It's politics.
Well, Rob, my people are from Minnesota too. My dad's a GRE customer, north of Walker. My people are in that Shakopee Prior Lake area. So it's not an anti-Minnesota thing. I'm just stating the fact, yeah, the battlefield we're on here. And right now, if the plant is not connected to that power line, which as it was paid for and intended to do, to put lignite energy into Minnesota as they had asked for, North Dakota has no economic interest in the power line, and that needs to be reclaimed because it'll make farmers happy all the way to the Red River and help our commerce there. There's no interest in North Dakota for projects other than Coal Creek Station and the use of that power line, and that has to be clear to everybody. If the plant goes, it's in our economic best interest to take that power line down too. And I think the idea that GRE has is, no, we're just going to take down the plant. That's not the way that needs to play out. And I hope everybody understands that. There's a difference of opinion right now, but the only difference is GRE's position against what is pretty much everybody in North Dakota's understanding of where this needs to go.
Do you think, I mean, everybody keeps talking about that there's going to be a new buyer. And I that was Governor Burgum's press release, you know, they're talking about finding a new buyer. you know, Senator Cramer's press release, Senator Hovind's press release. They're all talking about finding a new buyer. But at this point, Great River, they've announced that they have no interested buyers. Obviously, they don't want to, if Great River Energy gets their way, they want to continue to operate that power line and have it serve some other power, wind. I mean, should we even still be talking about the idea that a new buyer is going to come forward? Because I'm not even sure who that would be in this situation.
Well, I think the important press release to answer that question is J.C. Butler's from Dallas, Texas, who is the CEO of North American Coal, who is a willing partner to find a buyer. I don't think North American Coal can assume the operations of the plant. They're not interested in that. That's not their business. But they are at the table, which would synergize the fuel supply, and they're part of the.
And just for people who don't understand, Coal Creek Station sits almost right on top of the Falkirk mine. Now these are operated by two different entities, but it's kind of the genius of coal. It's one of the reasons why Coal Creek Station can be so efficient is the mine's right there. You don't have to, you know, load the coal onto trains and ship it across the country. The coal is that it uses is literally right there. But these are operated by different. Great River Energy owns and operates Coal Creek Station, is trying to sell it. North American Coal operates the Falkirk mine, and then they have a contract where they just sell all the coal that they mine to Coal Creek Station. And I don't know what Falkirk does. I haven't even thought about that or probed that, what Falkirk does as a mine. If Coal Creek Station's not there, I mean, there's still a market for coal, but now all of a sudden you have to transport it and all the other things. I don't know what that means. I got to think Falkirk is going to be hurt if not shut down as well. But I mean, that's just so people understand, that's how this mine, this how the mine and the plant operate together.
You might as well assume there's no Falkirk mine without Coal Creek Station.
I didn't want to say that definitively, but that seems the likely outcome to me.
Yeah, but North American is at the table publicly saying we'll be part of the solution, which is huge, because that only requires then another potential involvement of someone else that has a better economic situation going there. And here's where we're at with energy, Rob. Energy is not a free market, and it's failed when it's tried. It can't really be. But the bottom line is economics for coal. There's coal plants in North Dakota making money. And I'm not saying Jerry is not making money out there, but there's struggles with it in this current environment with cheap natural gas and all the subsidized wind and all that stuff. But in the end, both grids, which is MISO on the east and the Southwest Power Pole to the west, both go all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico, are crying out for baseload power. North Dakota needs. And the oil patch is right now, as you know, going through all sorts of problems. But long term, it's estimated that we have to double the baseload to finish the Bakken development. And there's a solution here, Coal Creek Station. There's a lot of potential for the plant for a buyer. There's risk involved with energy policy and the politics with that. But, for example, Senator Hovind happens to be, good for us, a leader in the area of grid reliability. He's working very hard on those issues to make sure there's proper compensation so we're all safe and we always have electricity. And he's the guy that other congressmen and senators are looking to for that policy, and he's doing it on a bipartisan basis. We need to look at incentivizing the capture of carbon. We need to look at making sure our grids are reliable. He's not against the greening of the grids per se, but he wants to make sure they're safe and that people get properly compensated for grid reliability, which can only really occur with base load lignite plants. They're the safest form of electricity. So over time, the economics of a power plant right now might be different with different owners. It depends on their purchase power agreements, right? So if they get into a situation, a new buyer that works with North American, and they come up with the needed demands, which there are for base load, and they get the right negotiated purchase power agreements and stuff, there is a cash flowing business there that can, have a new buyer make money. So Jerry's had two motives here. One is they make the claim that they're having economic struggles. And I don't doubt that in the short term here. But the other one is, we want just green electrons. And that's really much of their press release, is we want to just get green electrons. And where that gets to be a little bit misleading, number one is, it's true they've replaced baseload with a hydroelectric purchase power agreement out of Manitoba. So that has mitigated their need for Coal Creek Station personally. But their co-op's reaction, you know, is like, well, we're just going to have green electrons. That's not really true, because they're just, what GRE is saying to their members right now is, we want to get out of the baseload power production business, which they've been, get rid of Coal Creek, because we don't want to produce coal energy for the politics of that anymore. And what that means is, when my dad turns on his lights, because he's a GRE customer in Minnesota, he doesn't know where those electrons are coming from, whether they're from wind or something else. And what GRE is going to be doing then, if they're not producing baseload, is they're going to be searching the grid for buying it when they need it. If they don't have the baseload that they're producing themselves, they still have the ability to buy it off the grid. And the problem the grids are having is, a lot of companies are doing that in their short-term interest, is trying to get out of baseload production just so the grid, buying it off the grid. But the grids are saying, we just don't have this much baseload anymore. You guys keep going to this subsidized wind, and when we get into heat waves and polar vortexes, we're in trouble. So we've got a really messed up energy policy right now, that they can tell their media, they can tell their co-ops, we're going green, but that doesn't mean they're naturally going to get green. They're just buying black electrons when they need them from somebody else. So it's kind of a misnomer that they've done anything.
Well, the problem is the availability of those quote unquote black electrons is going to continue to be diminished, because this isn't just what's happening to coal in North Dakota. It's not just happening in North Dakota. I mean, frankly, it's been happening in other places for a long time. And if these politics continue as they are, our ability to buy those black electrons is going to be diminished as well. And that's really a big part of the problem I have here, is these things can be unpredictable. I will tell you that the oil and gas people were not planning on shutting down. You know, gosh, we got to be about 50% of North Dakota's daily oil production. In January, nobody thought that was going to happen, and then it happened.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, that's right. Coal is that steady diesel engine in the system. It's that heavy. It's there for you. It's always running. It's dependable. And, Rob, climate change is another serious debate and stuff like that. And
sure,
the reality is that if you're a climate change advocate, and I believe in climate change and we should try to reduce carbon, I'm not a denier of that issue. But what I know from I get a little in trouble with the hypocrisy on that. And one of the things that I do know is that when grandma and grandpa don't have air conditioner working when it's 105 or when it's 30 below, their furnace isn't working.
Their life is in jeopardy.
Your climate change movement is over.
Right.
You're done. So you need to understand that to have proper climate change policy, you need grid reliability. And you can't have hypocrisy. You know, you need to understand that, yes, wind has a place, but so does constant reliable power. It's a national security interest. Let's, you know, understand that issue. Let's do as Senator Hovind's doing, work to capture the carbon to create, you know, less carbon getting released. But in the end, if you take out the coal plants, you ruin the climate change movement, because you create unreliable grids, and other countries are still adding coal plants and stuff. So you're not affecting climate change. You're just creating a hypocrisy situation and weakening our national security with our current energy policies.
And that's the thing. We know how much coal we have in North Dakota. We know. I think it's like centuries worth. I mean, obviously a lot of that depends on how much we're using, and the way things are going, we may not be using as much. We have a ton of coal. We could operate coal plants here for a long, long time. We know how much the coal is going to cost to get out of the ground and bring it to the power plant. We know how much it's going to cost to turn that coal into electrons and shoot them down the transmission lines. We know that. It's a known thing. It's reliable. All you got to do is do it. My problem is, we're moving into a future with some of these energies. We don't know what the future of wind's going to be. I mean, I think there's out there people out there who claim to know, but it's so new, and it's so much is changing, and so much of it is built on politics, right? On government policy that is promoting wind. So we don't necessarily know if because wind is just, it's just definitely not as reliable. And also, I mean, everybody keeps pointing to natural gas, and yes, cheap natural gas is definitely a factor in this. But is natural gas going to continue to be cheap given what's happening to the oil industry right now? Because it's, we talk about big oil, but it's really big oil and gas. And a lot of the gas that's produced in the United States is a byproduct of oil production. And if we're not producing oil, then we're not producing the gas. And we're not going to just produce gas because gas prices aren't nearly high enough. And so gas prices are going to go higher. The oil and gas markets are extremely volatile. We've been lucky where we've had cheap gas for a long time now, but we have no guarantee that that's going to be the case in the future. We do have that guarantee with coal, but for whatever, that's what frustrates me is we have this thing. We know it works. Instead of investing the money that we're investing elsewhere in making coal better, which by the way, I still think there's a lot we could do. I think we've done a lot over the past decades. I think there's a lot we could still do in the future. Instead of spending our resources there, instead it seems like we're off tilting. Forgive the pun. We're tilting at windmills. I think this is just this is a grave mistake, and it's a moral hazard because, you know, I think by the time this really becomes a problem, it's going to be 10 years down the road, and a lot of the people making the decisions, either they're not going to be around anymore, or they're certainly not going to be in the same jobs.
Well, the frustration I have, Rob, after I've studied up on this now is, let's just say there's two rooms on this. So there's one room where Xcel Energy, the Great Rivers, and all those guys are doing press releases saying, we're going to be the coolest guys here. We're going to be carbon free. We're going to do this, and it's going to be great. It's going to be utopian. But there's a room which has been occupied by the Interim Energy Transmission Committee that all those same companies and the grids have been going to for 4 years saying we can't do any of this stuff without massive investments in power lines and substations, four to eight times more in North Dakota across our farmers' fields, trillions of dollars. One of the expert testimonies there, which isn't disputed, is Xcel's plan was analyzed to go to 60% carbon free by 2030, and the testimony was that'll cost trillions of dollars. The media doesn't cover that room and say, this is how expensive this is going to get to try to go carbon free. And we're not in the utility rates and those things are going to just have to skyrocket.
Something. Well, there was a quote from that committee room that I've been kind of pounding on, and it was from an official in North Dakota's transmission authority. And he said, and I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have it in front of me, but you can go find it in one of my past columns or blog posts. But he essentially said that the average public has no idea how many more transmission lines and how much we're going to have to invest in those transmission lines to do it. And if you think about that, that's going to cost money. Where's that money going to come from? What's going to come from your utility rates? And it's going to come from your tax dollars. And where are we going to build these lines? Well, we're going to have to build them across people's property. And a lot of it's probably going to be greenfield development, where only our ability, greenfield versus brownfield. A brownfield development is where you can sort of follow an existing corridor. Maybe there's already a power line or something there, or a pipeline or something. And because that land's already been disturbed, obviously, you know, we'll just build along it as well. When we can do that, that's great. But if you're building all this new transmission capacity, your ability to do that, because you got to go into new areas. So in order to accomplish what they want, we are going to have to build wind turbines everywhere, and we're going to have to build transmission lines to serve those everywhere, and we're going to develop, you know, disturbed lands. We're going to have fights with private property owners to do this. That's what's in our future if we continue on this road, but nobody's talking about it.
That's the frustration for me, because you're exactly right. That's the professional expert testimony that's the direction our energy policy is leaving. And what I would prefer to see is everybody in our congressional delegation and governor's office should get in their mind these hundreds of guys and ladies that in every weather, Rob, out here, it's amazing. You come out here when it's pouring rain, it's a blizzard, it's 105 degrees. Those coal miners are on the job digging coal to make us all safe. It supports every industry, every household in North Dakota. It supports the nuclear missile silos that protect our country. It's a net. Everybody thinks of these things like Coal Creek and the power line. The real asset here are those coal miners. They are the national security asset for us. Every time they go to work, they are providing you and I the ability to do our jobs. They put the electricity into the Capitol for us to make laws. And if our lawmakers can just get their arms around our policymakers in North Dakota, that the real national security asset in North Dakota are those coal miners, and they need to be protected because they are protecting us, the rest of this is going to work out. Because you, if you fight for that national security asset, the coal miner, right now, that lignite miner, all these other states can innovate all they want. They can do all their press releases and stuff because they'll have the security to have those debates, because those guys are going to work every day, 12-hour shifts, making sure the rest of us can have political debates and be safe doing it. And that's the only focus we need to have right now, in my opinion.
Lad, last question. The way things are constituted now, and I know what you're arguing is, if Great River Energy wants to close down Coal Creek, they got to close down that transmission line. And frankly, I agree with you, given the you know how we built those things to begin with. You know, I don't think we can just ignore that. The reason why they were built is there was some benefit to North Dakota. If we leave that transmission line and close down the coal plant, there's no benefit to North Dakota. I agree with all that. But let's stipulate for a moment, right? I'm going to use a lawyerly term. You're a lawyer, so I'm going to use a lawyerly term. Stipulate for a moment to the scenario that Great River Energy wants to unfold, where they're trying to sell that power plant and just the power plant and not the transmission line. Can they do it?
No. No. That's a non-starter. They have to go together. They were permitted together. They cannot be separated. There's no other options. Now, there may be an option to add lines for a buyer, but that core line must be connected to the plant at all times or both taken down at the same time. There's no other options.
Lad, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Rob. Appreciate it.